Chair Dr. Nicole Alexander Scott and Director Smiley, the governor had to hop onto a White House call, so you have the three of these cabinet members today, and we will take your follow-up questions.
The conference is now in talk mode.
For the director, the governor had mentioned that all hospitals had submitted their plans on how to resume elective surgery safely. Are you able to elaborate when that may happen in which phase of reopening the economy, and are you able to share any of the new guidelines?
So we will be reviewing plans that we receive and then continuing to work as a team on what approach will be taken. So there will be more to come that will be shared through the course of the week.
Thank you.
Other comments? This is...
Oh, go on. Go ahead.
No, this is Jen Hodgkin, so go ahead, whatever the next reporter...
Oh, sorry. I thought it was someone else asking. I'm having trouble squaring two of the things in the thesis. So phase one says you can see friends and family, but the governor says the quarantining around the border would still be in place. Obviously, a lot of Rhode Islanders, you know, their immediate family could be over the border in Massachusetts, maybe one town away. So would they still be able to go see their family once that phase one starts, or would that require a 14-day quarantine?
Yeah, this is Steph Pryor. We are still assessing the possibilities as pertains to our border policies. So that remains an open question, and we will have more to say on that on the days and weeks going forward.
Okay, thanks.
Governor, can you clarify, please, when the casinos would be allowed to reopen and whether they will be allowed to reopen with a smoking section?
This is Stephen Pryor. The question of whether to reopen casinos is being considered in the context of other large-scale venues. There are multiple considerations as pertain to our casinos in particular. We're looking very closely at the casino question, and we will have more to say soon.
Along the lines of businesses reopening, restaurants and some retail, looks like there were references to some restaurants, some retail businesses opening at different times and under pilots. Who is deciding among those restaurants and businesses which ones are able to reopen during which phases and which ones must stay closed?
This is Stephen Pryor. First, I would point out that there are some anticipated expansions of offerings and services that will occur across the board for restaurants and retail shops. For example, retail locations in phase one will be allowed to undertake in-store pickup of pre-orders. Restaurants with outdoor seating may, under certain circumstances, be permitted to open up such outdoor seating. So those are possibilities that, under the right circumstances, as we enter and proceed through phase one, will be available on a statewide basis. As pertains to pilots, the procedures through which businesses be able to volunteer for pilots are being developed. We're considering input from industry associations, from municipalities, and from other stakeholders in developing those pilot policies.
Got it. And if you just do follow up with child care, it sounds like a similar situation for child care, where some are going to be allowed to reopen and then others. Who decides who gets to reopen at what time?
There is a team working specifically on child care opportunities. There are intricate conversations occurring with child care centers about what might be possible. In the near term, there may be some slots available in existing facilities that are open for first responders, and there may be possibilities for opening child care centers and services. use, so those slots and opportunities are not yet open. And we'll have more to say about those possibilities as well as others in the near future.
Secretary Pryor, I'm wondering if there's any indicators that maybe this is actually a better question for Director Alexander Scott, that an outdoor event, a large gathering of people outdoors, maybe such as a protest that happened outdoors this past weekend or outdoor restaurant settings, are there significant expectations that there's a lower risk for an outdoor setting than an indoor setting? And is that something that will factor as you move into phase two and three?
It is something that we factor in. We're continuing to learn more about transmission of the virus. It isn't a significant component, but it is a helpful one to take into account as we're looking creatively and safely about the best way to go forward.
I feel almost foolish
for asking this. Suggests that there's no hard data that says, look, if we're outside based on what you've studied over the last few months, if there's an outdoor event, that is a more appropriate setting for a group of 15, 25, whatever it may be, than an indoor setting. Is there any hard data?
There is, the hard data is sparse, I would say, but it gives the ability to social distance more effectively when you're outside in a larger setting, and that's always going to be the key, because anyone who is sick with symptoms, where someone's coughing and there's risk of spreading, needs to be home regardless. So the benefit of outdoors is more so for the ability to social distance and minimize the risk of infectious particles landing on someone compared to an indoor setting where people tend to naturally be limited by the size of the facility. It's less so connected to what happens in the air outside versus indoors.
Got it. Thank you.
Dr. I would assume, though, if people are eating in restaurants.
We'll take the restaurant.
I was going to say, it seems to me that people eating at restaurants, even if outdoors, would be unable to wear face coverings. Has that sort of issue arisen? This is my Pablo from Motif.
You're asking, would they be able to wear face coverings?
No, I'm saying that Secretary Pryor said that there was some discussion about reopening dine-in restaurants under limited circumstances with outdoor seating, and it seems to me that restaurants would be simply unable to have people wear face coverings while eating, so that would figure into the problem that if you reopen dining restaurants, people there would be unable to comply with the face covering requirement.
Right.
That was my question.
Right, and that's the case outdoor or indoor, but what is key is that the servers and restaurant workers and those who are cooking or contributing to the food preparation can continue to wear cloth-based coverings, and that will be an important element as well.
I'll just add, this is Stefan. It's possible, we're still developing protocols, but it's possible that the dine-in patron could wear a face mask while ordering and during other such times when they are not unto themselves at the table and eating, and remove it to eat. So we're working on those protocols with the Department of Health.
All right, thank you.
This is for Dr. Alexander Scott. Doctor, at the end of last week, we saw some large clusters of positive cases at food manufacturers, particularly Taylor Farms in North Kingstown and Danielle Inc. in Burrillville. Have any of those numbers changed, and have we seen any other large groupings of cases emerge with food manufacturers?
Those numbers have not changed significantly. We still have the same number of cases at Taylor Farms and Danielle. We are continuing, though, to work aggressively with the employers there, make sure that they have the measures in place that are needed to prevent transmission, with requiring symptom screening of employees. employees and ensuring some form of face cloth-based covering is being used while working, and certainly access to hand sanitizer. Those measures work, and so thankfully we have not seen any resurgence of high numbers of cases occurring.
For Dr. Alexander Scott, could you clarify what exactly is going on with the veterans? So my understanding from what you said at the televised press conference was that there are no symptomatic cases, that is, that there are positive cases that tested positive but without symptoms. And I'm asking, well, what led to the process of testing? What made people suspicious then if there are no symptoms? And to what extent are the health and lives of the residents threatened in an asymptomatic situation?
So I did share that we did have the first case from the vet's home that had symptoms, Michael, and that's what really originated this process. We immediately jumped in with an aggressive approach in terms of our infection control measures, particularly in congregate settings, given the population at risk. And so because of that initial case, we have a process in place for testing all of the residents and all of the staff to help identify who may be positive, even though they do not have symptoms. So that's why the majority of the cases that I shared are among asymptomatic people, but the initial case did have symptoms.
So no one from the veterans' home is hospitalized?
The outside of the initial case, correct.
The initial case is hospitalized, but all right, thank you. I apologize for my confusion.
No problem.
I have a question. When are the gyms and yoga studios going to be able to open, or is that, will that be like these two?
We have not, it's Stefan, we have not yet made a determination on health clubs, gyms, and related facilities.
Doctor, I've gotten some accounts from some nurses on the ground that there are people in their 30s and 40s who are suffering strokes as a result of COVID here in Rhode Island. Are you factoring in? Obviously you are, but can you sort of explain how severe injuries, severe reaction to COVID plays into the decision to move from phase one or move back to phase one if we've gotten to phase two? In other words, not just deaths and total number of confirmed cases.
Absolutely. It's the key focus on flexibility and adaptability and being driven by data and science. If we were to see some cluster of cases that raised concern, it would definitely factor into particularly the part about the system readiness that the governor referenced with our plan for moving from one phase to another. So we have a model in place and a process in place to stay in front of the data and use that to absolutely drive what our decision points are as we go forward.
We have a minute or so left.
What is the plan for parks and beaches, and what's the time frame on that, insofar as you know it?
Michael, we're going to have more information on that later this week. I expect towards the end of the week we'll have some more details.
Okay.
Well, I'll ask one. We've still got a few seconds left. Can't be right back here. Crisis standards of care, which we started asking about some 10 days, 2 weeks ago. Massachusetts put out a model. People commented on it. They revised their model. It's all public. Here we are, and we're already starting to reopen, and we haven't seen crisis standards of care in our own state of Rhode Island. When is that going to happen?
That's a great question, Kathy. We have put the work into it and have worked closely with hospitals on developing it so that we have a consistent statewide approach. We are thrilled that we have not had to activate it or even consider that, and we will this week be able to have the document available to the public of what has been in place and thankfully not needing to be used.
And when this week do you anticipate?
Towards the end of the week, we'll be ready.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All right,
Dr. Alexander Scott.
We'll take one last question.
Thanks. This is Kim Kalunian. Just in sort of in a similar vein, I know you had asked hospitals to submit reports about COVID, you know, PPE, all of that kind of thing. What trends, if any, have you been seeing from those reports, and are any of those reports going to be made public?
As part of our daily dashboard, our PPE team works closely with hospitals and other entities to have an assessment of what their burn rate is. It directly informs what we're able to do, such as last week's announcement that we will we have enough surgical masks so that healthcare workers in hospital facilities can now conserve and use the masks once per day, as opposed to getting the mask to last for 3 days. So that information directly informs how we respond, also how we use it with clusters of cases when we're seeing that across the various congregate settings. Hospitals are working hard to maintain a supply. It probably varies between the number of days it lasts for, but no one has completely run out. Our focus is helping to make it so that folks have enough. They don't have to be as aggressive with the conservation approaches while encouraging everyone to still continue them. So last week's announcement is an example of what we have wanted to do, knowing that healthcare workers are our heroes on the front lines of this response.
And do you think those reports will be made public at any point?
It's such a dynamic process that changes on a daily basis. Keeping it at this high level of understanding how many days out they have is really what the preference is, because it changes constantly, and we have a team working overtime to help make sure that the number of days supply increases with each passing day.
Steph, just with a last note, the governor talked about our website, reopeningri.com. There's a presentation on that website that you can see, and it contains a lot of information. That website is also in Spanish, so please go ahead and check that out. And for Spanish-speaking residents of Rhode Island, that information is available.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow.